you're just too sick, Santa. You're going to have to stay in bed, and that's that.
But it's Christmas Eve!
Deliver the toys.
The elves just don't possess the magic to visit the millions and millions of boys and girls in one night.
Well, then I guess there isn't going to be a Christmas.
Well, there is one man who has that kind of magic, only he's kind of busy this time of year himself.
You mean?
That's right. Hanukkah Harry.
Holiday time. Whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah, of course, they coincide this year. Spend the next couple minutes discussing what Winnipeg Jets fans have on their holiday wish list from their favorite hockey team as 2016 expires and 2017 commences.
Chris, can we actually have that music continuing throughout the entire segment?
Just the constant bed of the Jewish music underneath us.
Yeah.
I should mention this segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. It's, by the way, one of the funniest Saturday Night Live sketches is Hanukkah Harry, played by John Lovitz.
Yeah.
Very funny. And young Mike Myers, I believe Victoria Jackson's also in that sketch. So if you really want to watch something funny that you may not have seen before, I do recommend Googling Hanukkah Harry Saturday Night Live. It's a very funny sketch.
Yeah, it's a great sketch, and it's always a good time of year to listen to Adam Sandler and the Hanukkah song, right? We actually had our Hanukkah dinner yesterday because I'm going to be out of town for the first night of Hanukkah, which is on the 24th this year. Very late, by the way. It's usually early December, November.
I have to look at the calendar, but it's like very, very rare that Hanukkah and Christmas actually coincide and start pretty much on the same day.
I actually like it.
Sure. Well, it's nice, you know, brings everybody together and that
sort
of thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, your holiday wish list for the Winnipeg Jets fans. If you're the world's biggest Jets fan, and you sitting and you're writing out your Christmas list and you're writing out your Hanukkah list and you know, this is what you want to see come from Santa Claus or this is what you want to see come from Hanukkah Harry. What's at the top of your Winnipeg Jets holiday wish list?
I think that's easy for me.
Go on.
Better special teams. I think, you know, we talked about it during the first hour of the show, guys, and we saw it Thursday night against the Florida Panthers, Dave. Penalty kill and power play has not been good this year. So for me, If you're a Jets fan and you're waking up on Christmas and you're looking under that tree, what would be the best present? Better special teams.
Well, I'm going to go with secondary scoring because other than Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele, who have 17 and 14 goals respectively, nobody else is in double digits in goal scoring right now on this team. And so that's what, in my mind, this team needs. Well, I mean, this team is pretty good in terms of goal scoring. So, because they, you know, I think they rank about 13th in the league in total in terms of goals for, but which means that it is spread out. But I just think that they need to get a little bit more scoring, a little bit more balance, because it's very top heavy right now from this Jets squad.
And a new blender for Paul Maurice. We talked about that earlier.
Yes, a new blender because of the line. Does he do too much of that? Does he blend the lines too often?
On Thursday night, he put Blake Wheeler and Brian Little back together after they didn't start the game together, and it worked because Brian Little scored in the third period, Dave. So, I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But, I mean, I can't criticize Paul Maurice's line juggling, Drew, because there have been so many injuries. So what is he supposed to do when there's so many guys coming in and out of the lineup? And I realize the last couple of weeks it's been a little bit more stable. You know, he's got Perreault and Stafford back and Brian Little's back. But, I mean, you've had so many guys coming in and out of the lineup. I think he's done a good job with the D pairings.
Well, the D pairings have been pretty consistent.
Yeah.
The only time he actually started to make a change on the D pairings, he put Enstrom.
When Trouba came back.
Yeah, he put Enstrom and Byfuglien back together and put Trouba with Morrissey.
Yeah, and then he went quickly back to Morrissey and Byfuglien.
Well, Morrissey and Byfuglien have played together pretty much the entirety of the year, and they've been stable.
Yeah.
And Enstrom and Trouba, since Trouba returned, they've been stable. There's no reason to really juggle those.
I think Paul Maurice has done a good job with the goaltenders. I mean, we knew that Connor Hellebuyck at a certain point was going to get the majority of the starts, so I think he's done a good job managing Hutchinson starts and Hellebuyck starts. You know, sometimes do I question, you know, his decision On the power play, sure. I think Patrick Laine should be out there for the entire 2 minutes of that power play, really, the way he's been putting the puck in the net on special teams. So it doesn't always work, but certainly Thursday night it worked with Wheeler and Little.
Okay, continuing with the theme of the holidays and the gifts for Winnipeg Jets fans, you said your big one under the tree, Ezzy, is better special teams. Dave, you said that the secondary scoring is the big gift under the tree. What's your stocking stuffers? What's your smaller gifts that you want to see a Winnipeg Jets fan receive in the 2017 season?
A healthy Tyler Myers?
It's a good option.
The only problem I think with that, guys, is how are you going to fit a 6'7" defenseman?
It's a really long stocking.
Yeah, like that's going to have to be like the world's largest stocking.
It'd be like the body condom that Leslie Nielsen wears in Naked Gun 2.
Another good movie reference there, David. Well done. We talked Hanukkah Harry, we talked Naked Gun, always good.
Yeah.
Do you like 2.5 or 33 1/3?
I'm anything Leslie Nielsen is in.
Anything Leslie Nielsen is good with?
2.5, I believe, didn't have OJ, and then 33 1/3 had OJ, right?
No, the first one had OJ.
Yeah.
I think the third one did.
No,
maybe
he
all
He certainly
did.
Was in the first one because he was Norberg.
He was in the first one.
He was Norberg in the first one.
And then he was in the wheelchair. Wasn't he in the wheelchair in the second one?
No, he was in the wheelchair at the end of the first one, right. And then he gets shot off of the stadium when they're trying to save the Queen who's at the baseball game.
Right.
Great movies.
I've got to kill the Queen.
That's right. And then Leslie Nielsen's playing the umpire,
right. Yes.
And he starts dust busting the home plate. That was a very good movie.
I got another one.
Okay. You have a big stocking, so you filled it with one giant defenseman so far. What else do you have in there?
Yeah, I'm going to put in more face-off wins.
Face-off wins, a good one.
Against the Florida Panthers, the Jets were actually very good in the face-off circle, but that's been an area where they have had some difficulties. So
still dead last in the entire NHL.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that has, with Brian Little's return, it has improved. It's not as atrocious as it was when Little was out of the lineup when they were losing, three-quarters of every draw.
Yeah, Drew, so we're going to put a healthy Tyler Myers in that stocking, and then we're going to put some more face-off wins in another stocking, and then Dave's got something else that he wants to put in the stocking.
He's got the Naked Gun trilogy in the stocking already.
If I'm going for a spin of the dreidel, we're going to switch it up, and
sure.
What I think that, what the Jets fans should win is potentially better goaltending and keeping the puck out of that. Because right now the Jets rank second in the league in terms of goals against. And so that's not good. You're getting scored on too often,
mm-hmm.
and they need to keep the puck out of the net. So potentially maybe some better goaltending, maybe some better defense, team defense, not blaming one particular person, but just as a collective group, they need to keep the puck out of the net more often than they have been.
The only team that's given up more goals than the Winnipeg
Stars.
Jets are is the Dallas Stars.
Right.
And they did it in one fewer game than the Jets have. So, right. I mean, you know that how bad the Stars goaltending
the Jets have
has been.
Again, like I said, secondary scoring is important because, it's more balanced and teams need to be more balanced. But I just think, as a group, this team needs to have a better commitment to defense and just keeping that puck out of the net.
And I think we already know what is going to be in the stocking for the Winnipeg Jets. It's more days off.
Well, they're going to get
less
those.
Games.
I mean, they get those. It's not even they don't even have to request that gift. They knew that gift was coming based on the schedule.
That's what
and
I'm
everything.
Saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, the schedule thing is done. Thankfully, no, we don't have to hear. I thought it was played out when it was going on.
So maybe we should put
out.
Maybe a pillow under the tree so that they can get some extra rest because they've played a lot of games.
They have played a lot of games. What do you think, Dave? Is this an appropriate time to bring up what Ezzy's doing this afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a holiday wish list, but I mean, it's kind of on our wish list of things to make fun of Ezzy about.
Yeah. So, Ezzy, you're going for a pedicure this afternoon.
Yep, that's correct.
How did this come about? You're not. I mean, I'm.
In,
you,
in your 34
enjoy,
years.
Yeah, in your 34 years, as far as we know, you've never really been one for
manscaping.
For pedicures, for manicures, for massages,
for bathing,
for lug. Yeah, I mean, there was a time, and we can dig it up from the archives, where you were showering with a garden hose for a long period of time.
Well, it wasn't a garden hose. The shower head fell off, so I was using
like a farm animal. You were showering.
It was
like
a shower
farm
hose. It wasn't like I was going in the backyard and using a garden hose, Drew.
You didn't have a shower head. You were using a hose to cleanse yourself.
Okay. Yes. That's true.
Okay. So
hold on, Drew. Those were dark times.
Yes.
So he progressed.
In the time since you were using a hose to clean yourself versus today, December 17th,
yes.
You're now going for a pedicure this afternoon.
Yes, I am. And as you mentioned, I've never had a pedicure in my life. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'm going to be going for a pedicure with Naomi later this afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And, quite frankly, I think I need one.
I bet you Naomi really thinks you must need one if you guys are doing
all
this.
I can say is this. God have mercy on the pedicure.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the esthetician who draws the short end of the straw and has to do anything with your feet.
Like, should I prep before the pedicure? Like, should I be, like, washing my feet just to make it easier on the staff?
Actually, you should just amputate your feet. That would be easiest on the staff.
No, I'm not going to do that. I love my feet, but... I'm actually pretty excited.
Hey, you know what? You're entitled. You know, get a little luxury for those bad boys.
But I would say probably cleaning your feet would be a good start before the pedicure.
Give them a little wash.
Give them a little clean. You know, make sure that things are looking.
Spritz a little soap on there.
Yeah, you know, maybe put in some moisturizing cream so the calluses aren't as thick as you'd expect.
Well, hold on. If you're going to throw me under the bus, you've had a pedicure before.
Many times, but I've never once hid that. Or, I mean, I would go for a pedicure. I would gladly leave the show right now and go for a pedicure.
Help me here. What should I expect? Yeah. Tell me what I'm going to experience this afternoon.
Well, you're going to get your nails clipped. That would be
No. I'm not getting a... I'm just getting a pedicure.
Yeah, they clip your toenails.
Oh, well, you said... I thought you said...
Well,
no, I said
nails.
Oh, okay. I thought it was fairly clear I meant toenails.
We're talking pedicures.
Yeah, we're talking pedicures. I'm curious. Why aren't you getting the mani-pedi?
My hands are fine.
How bad are your feet that you can, that, I mean.
Well, no, it's, I think just, you know.
It's a couple things.
It's a couple things, you know.
I'm sure Naomi would love to get a manicure and a pedicure.
Oh, so
I
think
she is, actually.
Okay, so why don't you get the same?
I don't need someone touching my hands.
But you're okay with someone touching your feet?
Yeah.
Yes.
Riveting radio is what this is.
By the way, you said that you've had a pedicure many times. What are we talking 10, 20, 50?
No, it wouldn't be 10, but it would be closer to about probably 5 times, I would suggest.
Have you had a manicure this year?
I have not had a manicure. Last time I had a manicure pedicure would have been last September.
What?
I was at a friend's wedding, and I had some time to kill, so I went.
Drew's done no manual labor in his life. Those hands need no manicures.
By the way, guys, that sound you're hearing is people turning off their radio.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the results from the Yahoo Sports survey of U.S. hockey fans. Some interesting results
there. With a couple of Yahoos.
With a couple of Yahoos. Yeah, the Yahoo Radio will return here on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, still to come on the show, Terry Koshin of the Toronto Sun is going to join us, talk a little World Juniors. Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is going to join us. Look at the Metropolitan Division and around the NHL as a whole. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch the Jets game, Bernstein's Deli, big screen TVs, full volume, great drink and food specials. Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall.
You know, when it's this cold out, Drew, and it's minus 100, it feels like outside right now. You know what my favorite thing to get at Bernstein's Deli is?
The Illegal Curve Sandwich?
No.
Oh.
I would probably get that as well.
Yes, naturally.
Because I like to eat a lot. Uh-huh. But it's a bowl of borscht.
Yeah, it is a good borscht. It's good borscht weather.
When it's cold, you go in there and you have a nice bowl of borscht. And, you know, just it really warms up your soul, Drew.
It does warm up your soul. I would agree with you. It is very borschty weather out there.
That's why they call it Jewish penicillin.
That's what they call chicken soup.
Well, soup in general.
No, chicken soup.
Does it have to be chicken soup?
Yeah, 100%. Chicken soup with matzo balls. Right. Jewish penicillin.
Okay.
Yeah. Not borscht. Borscht is Ukrainian.
I think that should be, probably is.
No, it is. There's nothing problem.
Is this the Illegal Curve cooking show? Like, well, on, boys.
I mean, I'm just saying. It's, you know.
Well, Dave, I do love Bobby Flay's barbecue addiction, so.
Yahoo Sports survey.
Drew, you better be careful or we're going to chop you.
Yeah, Yahoo Sports survey of U.S. hockey fans.
Yep.
Interesting study being done. By the good folks at Yahoo.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually.
Yeah. According to a survey, 51% of current U.S.-based NHL fans said that a formal ban on fighting would have no impact on their viewership. 24% said it would make them more likely to watch hockey, and 25% said it would make them less likely to watch hockey. There was always the thought process that one of the big draws for U.S. NHL fans is the violence and the fighting and the fisticuffs. According to the survey of current NHL fans, keep fighting, lose fighting, it's going to make no difference to more than half of them.
Yeah,
surprised by that?
A little bit. You know, I expected maybe that number to be around 35 or 40%, but when you look at the numbers, guys, and fighting is down, and as far as the Jets go, I mean, Chris Thorburn's really the only guy that has fought this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's among the leaders in the NHL as far as fighting majors go, but, I mean, fighting is becoming a less and less part of the game, and, you know, Drew, that I like fighting in hockey. I mean, I do think it does have a place in the game. Not the stage fighting, but, you know, the fighting that happens as part of hockey. It's a unique aspect of the game, but the reality is the fighting numbers are going down and down. You know, we were talking about the movie Ice Guardians earlier, and we had executive producer Adam Scorgi on, and you know, he was talking about, you know, fighters kind of being a dying breed in the NHL, right? You know, the guys like Chris Thorburn or Anthony Peluso, those kind of dedicated enforcers, even though Thorbs has obviously that beautiful sniper touch, but not that surprised when it comes to the fighting. You know, some of the other polls, you know, are to be expected as far as, you know, who are the must-see players in the NHL and stuff like that. No surprise that guys like Ovechkin and Crosby and McDavid are at the top of that list, Drew, right? But, you know, mm-hmm. The fighting one is an interesting one because it's something that I think that the NHL GMs have talked about, you know, at times over the years, but where is it going? And I really think that it's going to be status quo. I think, you know, fighting is going to continue to be a five-minute major, and until there really is a big shift in, you know, philosophy, I think you're just going to continue to see less and less fights, and one day maybe there won't be any fights in the NHL. So, I mean, I think that's a long time away. But right now, I think, you know, not that surprised that, you know, half of U.S. fans wouldn't mind if fighting was banned.
Yeah, it just seems like the whole fighting argument's a bit of a red herring when it comes to actual viewership or actual enjoyment of the game, and this survey may be bearing that out.
Well, when you actually watch a game and you see a fight, what happens? Everybody stands up, everybody gets pumped up. It usually gets the crowd fairly pumped up. So, yeah, I mean, no, but I'm saying, like, regardless, I mean, yeah. The fact is that people don't shy away from it. I mean, would I get into a fight? Probably not, but I'm saying that.
Yeah, you'd bruise like a peach.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, I'm from the North End, Drew. Let's not forget. Yeah, but the mean streets of the
Garden City.
West K,
sorry.
But the point is that you know, I mean, I'm a little surprised by the number. You know, I thought it might be a little bit higher, but the fact is that when you see that, and again, remember, ultimately, why do these leagues make these decisions? They do it for dollars and cents.
Sure.
And so, you know, ultimately, if this isn't going to impact viewership, then you're not going to change it. And if you see that, right, you see 50% would watch what doesn't impact them, 25% would watch it less, and 25% would watch it more. Well, do you really need those 25% that are going to watch it more if you're going to lose the 25% that are going to watch it less?
No.
Obviously not, because generally the 25% who are already watching it that like and would watch it less are probably your really hardcore fans. So, I mean, are you going to want to do anything to dissuade them? I suspect not.
That's why you're just going to continue with the status quo on those numbers. I think the second question from their survey, and it's actually an ongoing, they're filtering out the results ongoing, so there's going to be more results next week. The second question was more interesting. It was a question regarding who is the most must-see player in the NHL. You know, who is the one that drives the most eyeballs to the television screen? 26% of all respondents identified Alex Ovechkin as a player they make time to watch on television or pay to see play in an arena. Okay, that's fine. Here's the more concerning part. Although perhaps the NHL should be more concerned that the most popular answer among fans was, I don't consider any players to be must-see players. That was the answer given by 31% of all respondents.
Yeah, that's...
Isn't that just the most damning statement about the NHL's failure to market their players, that 31% of all U.S. hockey fans don't care about the individual players?
Yeah, maybe, Drew. But, I mean, what's probably the most surprising to me is that Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby isn't number one on this list. And I realize Alexander Ovechkin, you know, gets 50 goals on an annual basis here, but if you've watched Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby this year, to me, those are the two most exciting players in the game right now. You could throw in Patrick Laine into that mix.
Sure.
You could throw in Austin Matthews. I would even throw in Dave Nikolai Ehlers on the Jets. He's been very exciting to watch on a nightly basis.
But these are American
hockey
fans.
Sure, American fans, and you know, you'd expect, you know, Ovechkin and Crosby to be on there because
Ovechkin's 26%. He leads.
And Crosby's next.
And Crosby's next at 24%.
Right.
So it's not a big disparity.
Right.
But Connor McDavid, who by far is the, I mean, if he's not the most exciting player,
he's leading the league in points.
Yeah. Is down at 9%, you know, tied with an injured Steven Stamkos and behind Andrei Kopitar. Now, Andrei Kopitar is a hell of a hockey player, but he doesn't really do – Sure. He's not what I would describe as an exciting player to watch.
Sure, and this is a survey, so let's not take it too seriously. Just
a representative sample.
Yeah, just ask Hillary Clinton supporters. We're not going to get into that. But
you just did.
I'd expect a guy like Austin Matthews –
Matthews has 15%. So according to
and I'd expect that to be even higher because he's American, obviously. So I expect him to be closer to, you know, the top three on that list. But I mean, does the NHL do a good enough job of marketing its players? I mean, I don't have the answer to that. I mean, you'd have to ask. You'd have to maybe do another survey on that, Drew. But you know, you look at right now where the game is, and you know, have we ever had this many exciting players in the NHL to follow? Maybe not since, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, Dave, with, you know, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Dale Hawerchuk, and these types of players. So, I mean, right now, I said it on Wednesday's show, I mean, the NHL has so many amazing, exciting players and many young, exciting players. You know, we didn't even throw in Jack Eichel, you know, who's been very good since returning from injury. So, I mean, I guess the NHL could do a better job of marketing its players. And, you know, with McDavid and Austin Matthews coming into the league in the last couple of years, you know, certainly there are no shortage of exciting players to watch on a nightly basis.
It doesn't really surprise me when you see the players, right? You got Ovechkin at 26%. You got Crosby at 24%. You got Patrick Kane at 19%, right? Those are the guys that most, you know, Connor McDavid, I mean, let's be realistic. First of all, he's Canadian. Second of all, he plays in the Western Canadian market. Played in Toronto, maybe a little bit different. Obviously, here in Canada, we know Connor McDavid, and the truth is, and as he said it, there's no question, or Drew, you might have said it, there's no question, he is, without question, the most exciting guy to watch on a nightly basis. Like, you pay money to see this guy play hockey. I mean, he is that good that regardless of what team around him he has, he's the guy you want to pay to watch him play on the ice. Now, so the number, that number, his number being that low, you got to remember, like, this is the guy who doesn't, they don't show him in the U.S.
And that's where I say is the most damning failure of the NHL, is that they don't promote somebody who is so skilled and so talented that it doesn't matter if he plays in Edmonton.
The problem, I think it does matter. That's the problem. I think that look, again.
The NFL manages to put eyeballs on their most important players, regardless of where they play. The NFL does manage to do that better than the NHL does.
Look, if Connor McDavid played in Buffalo, I think it's probably a bit of a different story. I think Connor McDavid playing in Edmonton.
So you're just saying it's the cross the border, the Canadian
absolutely.
Factor.
I think it's absolutely that. I think if Connor McDavid played in Anaheim, he'd be in tops of this list. Or if he played, especially if he played in the Eastern market, if he played in Philadelphia, if he played in the New Jersey, anything like that, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind Connor McDavid would be top. He'd be with Ovechkin and Crosby right now on that list.
An interesting survey. You can check it all out at Yahoo's Puck Daddy there. Our good friends Josh Cooper and Greg Wyshynski, of course, running that area.
Sean Leahy's
there too. Yes, I apologize to Sean. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus a bit to the World Junior Hockey Championships. Terry Koshin of the Toronto Sun joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And for the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news, that's available on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Toronto Sun and Post Media, Terry Koshin. Terry, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us. How are
you? Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for joining us, Terry. Appreciate it as always. Have you on to talk a little bit about the World Juniors. They get underway in about, Boxing Day. So what, about 9 days' time now? Yeah, 9 days, 10 days from now. Canada just announced their roster earlier this week. You know, how would you describe this Team Canada roster? There's no superstars on it. I think that's fairly clear.
That's a given. Yeah. I mean, Dylan Strome might argue with you on that, and you know, assuming that he might become one day in Arizona, but there isn't. Not when you have these six players still in the NHL that you do. And you know, I was with them all week in Bob Rand, just north of Montreal, and I was really impressed, guys. It was just, there's a lot of depth there, both on the blue line and up front. no superstars, but it really doesn't peter off as far as the potential for talent up front goes, especially. And I think the same is in the blue line as well, and really in net. Carter Hart and Connor Ingram they've both been excellent in the Western Hockey League to this point, and both were good again this week in camp. And you know what Hockey Canada preferred to have some of those guys back: Beauvillier, Krause, perhaps Jacob Chychrun, sure. But there's confidence in the group going forward, and from what I saw on the ice and off, these guys are ready for it. The guys who are back are, you know, Barzal called it distasteful what happened last year, and he actually winced when he said that. So they're carrying that forward, and I think, you know, from what I saw this week, it was a really good start for them.
Terry, you mentioned some of the returning players. Team Canada's got five returning players from last year's team, and last year was obviously disappointing. Canada loses to Finland in the quarterfinals. Finland eventually wins it. Patrick Laine was on that team alongside Jesse Puljujärvi, and Sebastian Aho was on that team as well. How much are those returning players using that disappointing finish last year for this year?
Well, I got the sense that it was happening right away. And Sorry, guys. One of the guys who's not returning was saying earlier in the week that it's something that's being discussed, that was already being discussed in the dressing room before there were even any cuts. But, you know, these guys, just little reminders of what can go wrong. And I think one important thing that happened right away in camp was that first game they had against the university team on Monday night. All five of those guys from last year played in that game. And I think that was big. It was small in the general bigger picture, I suppose, of the week, but right away it gave the guys who weren't returning the idea that, okay, we're all in this together. We're going to have to work for something. I know last year at the camp here in Toronto, the selection camp, a lot of the bigger names, Marner, Strome, a few others, I don't even know if they even hit the ice for games in the selection camp games. And it set them apart right away. And it was not good. And then that carried forward to Finland. And there was just never much cohesion with that group at all, on or off the ice. And it was a thing that Dominic Ducharme, the head coach, did on purpose this year. I think it had guys buying in right away. And I think that was crucial. But so already you have the five of them kind of setting that tone. And each of the five were saying the same things this week, that, you know, they're embarrassed by it. And it certainly hasn't. It's been almost a year now that they lost the Finns in that quarterfinal game. And the bad feelings they have, the taste in the mouths, if you like to say, the bad taste has not gone away. And I just think that those five guys really set a tone for a real business-like approach all week.
Terry, what kind of coach do they have in Dominic Ducharme?
Well, I think they have a guy who, you know, if you compare him to guys in the past, if it makes sense, you can, I'm sure you guys would understand this. You know, you can see the ones who have been in the National Hockey League and those who haven't, who have coached this team. And just the approach they have. I think Ducharme's a guy, and I'm only comparing to last year, but maybe to Brent Sutter in the past as well, with Dave Lowry last year. But just somebody who, having learned, having been on that staff, guys, Ducharme was an assistant last year, just a little more open with the players, wants to be, from what I gather, around them more. He spoke a bit to us of what he was seeing in the dressing room this week. An even keel guy. Again, it's really, although he was part of that team last year and gets an OMA bid in camp, you don't deal a lot of the assistant coaches at this thing. It's more the head coach that we talk to more than anything. So I didn't really get to know Ducharme a lot last year. But this year, just the impression that, he wants to be a lot more in touch with these guys. And I think that was something that was missing a year ago. And again, already you're seeing the foundation for that.
Terry Koshan, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're discussing the World Junior Hockey Championships. They got underway on Boxing Day in Toronto and Montreal. Terry, goaltending for Team Canada has been a bugaboo at the World Juniors for much of the last decade, give or take.
Yeah.
Carter Hart, Connor Ingram, they're the two goalies who are going to wear the maple leaf. How is Canada fair look in goal? I mean, is this the weakest of the three areas for the team, or are they confident and feel as though they've got some good stability with Hart and Ingram?
Well, I think they certainly think there's stability there, and it's hard to call it the weakest. Not that, you know, if you're going to look at it that way and say which of the three areas, the goaltending, the D, and the forwards, maybe it is. But I think what was important for the goaltending this year, guys, that A, there wasn't, you didn't have a returning guy, and B, each of the three, Michael McNiven, Welsh, and Lone Sound, who got cut, and he'll be on call if one of these two gets injured and ready to join the team at a moment's notice. All three of them have been playing excellent hockey through the fall, and I think in the past, that hasn't always been the case. Perhaps some guys have been named to the selection camp roster, at least based on being on the team the year before, and they might not have had a good start to their Western Hockey major junior season, no matter where they played. That didn't happen this year. All three of these guys, Sean, Hart, especially, and Ingram in the Western Hockey League, you know, the save percentage numbers they're putting up and everything else. And I think that's important coming into this camp just because it allowed them to hit the ground running. And certainly for Hart, it did. I think there was the idea going into this that he was going to have the inside track, although he was the youngest of the three, the only one of the three who can play again for this team next year, and I imagine he will. They were all hot coming in. And Ingram had a good camp. He had a bit of a stumble in that first game, but he got over that quickly. And I don't necessarily think it's a weakness, but again, it's like everything else. Like you say, it hasn't been what you'd expect it to be. We remember Carey Price did in 07. I think a couple of years ago when they won, one guy that gets overlooked is Zach Vitale in goal. He had to be good late in that game against Russia in the gold medal game for Canada to win. But, you know, you're going back to the Justin Pogies and Jeff Glasses of the world to remember guys who really shone at this thing. But, you know, they're like I said, they're confident going in with Hart or Ingram. Is it still a bit open for number one? I think so, perhaps. But I still tend to think that Carter Hart's going to be the guy in that against Russia on Boxing Day.
Terry, Pierre-Luc Dubois was cut from Team Canada last year. He surprised a lot of people and was drafted third overall by the Columbus Blue Jackets. They decided not to take Jesse Puljujarvi. Is he the X factor for this Canadian team? He's going to be playing left wing on that top line with Dylan Strome. Is he a guy that Team Canada is really going to count on this year?
Well, he is an X factor for a number of reasons. He didn't have a super camp here, in Montreal, Bois-Brienne. And B, guys, he hasn't exactly lit the queue on fire, as you know, in coming back. I mean, what, 18 points, 6 goals in 20 games. So I don't necessarily think there's a concern there, but, you know, Hockey Canada is going to need him. They're going to need, you know, every line to produce at some point. But Dubois has that a bit of that marquee attraction to him, certainly, whether you still think it was a bit of a surprise and leap of faith for Columbus to take him where they did, ahead of Puljujärvi. He's going to be a guy that's going to be relied upon. And now you're seeing, you know, if he's on a line with Strome and Spears at practice today, which he is, then the goal now is just to get these things in stone. And, you know, they're going to have three exhibition games this week. But when they're starting with these line combinations today and the defense pairs, you know, in a perfect world, these things just carry forward now. And these guys all really mesh and gel. But the original wish is if you're putting Dubois on Strome's wing, you hope these two hit it off fairly quickly. I guess a fallback man would be Strome and Radish, you know, the two Erie Otters teammates. But certainly they're going to look at Dubois and say, okay, you know, get this going for us. And, you know, we'll see, though. It's an X factor is a good way to put it because he hasn't had the great return, you know, in the queue that he was probably hoping for.
Terry, you wrote about Blake Spears and how he was a long road to a roster spot, yet there he was making Team Canada's roster. What do you think he brings to the squad?
Well, he's one of these guys that it's kind of funny, you know, Ryan Jankowski, the director of player personnel, a big thing for him is body of work. And, you know, it's not just what they did this past week, whether they made the team or not or were cut. It's what they did going, you know, in the past several months. And, of course, Blake Spears had one game with the Sioux Greyhounds on October 27th. And I think it's one thing that they noted in including him on this roster was the ability to get past this adversity and really stay locked in day in and day out. He had one advantage with the wrist injury guys with the Greyhounds, that he didn't miss much time on the ice itself, and there he was able to work out and you know, stay in shape that way. This wasn't a knee or ankle, which would have kept him off, obviously. But there's just, I guess he kind of personifies a lot of the forwards. There's not a lot of, a flash on every shift, but this kid's quick. He's determined. I saw it in the games that he did play this past week. You know, an ability around the net, just a real tenacity there that they hoped that they were going to get to see, because for a lot of weeks they weren't sure if he was going to get to this point. And, you know, maybe a bit, still a bit of an eyebrow raise that he does make this team, not having played, you know, at all from October 27th onward. But I think he showed in camp that he's ready to do this for them.
Yeah, and I know, Terry, that the Devils organization is very high on him as well.
Yeah, they are. And he's going to play. He's going to play a long time. And again, guys, this is where we, the whole thing about no superstars. There could be one or two of these that come out of this group that we've already talked about, the Strohs and Dubois, that go on to be that in the National Hockey League. You know, there are also going to be a lot of guys on this team who never do skate a shift in the NHL. But the fact of the matter is we still have a lot of developing to do. And, you know, I just, with a guy like Spears, I would imagine that he plays a long time for the Devils. I mean, we've seen that's an organization, the way that they bring their young kids along, and he'll be given every opportunity to develop. Like I say, he's going to be, you ask about Dubois being an X factor. Perhaps Spears as well, just given that he hasn't played, but they know that, you know, their expectations are fairly high for him as well.
Terry, we'll let you go with this last question. Team Canada is obviously missing Nolan Patrick. He's injured. The U.S. loses, name escapes me. He plays for
Brock Besser.
Yes, Brock Besser of the University of North Dakota. You know, so obviously, you know, those two significant losses, both for Canada and for the United States. Who's the favorite entering this tournament? Is this, you know, some years it was clearly, you know, Canada's tournament to win. It doesn't seem from my perspective that's true this year. So from, you know, you're more plugged in, you've watched Team Canada. Is this as wide open a year for in this tournament as we've seen in the last number of years?
Yeah, going into it, I think it is. I think the States are still maybe a little bit of have that edge because they have depth throughout that roster like Canada does, but you know, they're missing some of the star attraction as well with Matthew Tkachuk, of course, the guy we have playing here in Toronto, Austin Matthews. So other players aren't going to be there, but that's kind of across the board. We know who Finland doesn't have, that's obvious. Line A, Puljujärvi perhaps, but, you know, Russia's going to miss Ivan Provorov. Canada, like we said, they got six guys that are out. So I think McDavid's not even part of it. You know, Marner and Konechny, and again, the three we already talked about, I mean, any one or two of those guys. And, you know, that's the beauty of this thing always going forward. You look at even the roster for next year and say, who's going to be back? Well, you don't know. A couple of guys are going to make it that we don't see coming right now.
Right.
But point is, going into this, I think the field is a little more wide open. And guys, if you look back at the past, you know, since Canada won that five-year run of golds that ended in 2009, you know, the gold medal winner in each of the successive 7 years didn't even medal the year before. So I think we've seen this kind of openness going into it that you might be able to say, okay, well, team A, B, and C are favorites. You know, but it's still hard to say. I still think you're dealing with four or five teams. You're dealing with the States, you're dealing with Canada, Finland, Sweden, and Russia. Three of those teams are going to be on the podium. I know Slovakia snuck in 2 years ago at the bronze, but that was out of the ordinary. So if you're looking at that group of five, three of those teams will emerge. But I think right now, going into it, it is fairly even. I think maybe Canada, the U.S., and Sweden might be the three a bit above, you know, Russia and Finland. But we see year after year in this. One thing we got to remember, Canada has only the one gold since 2009, is that it doesn't get blown out. The games are always close. The years they finish fourth, last year they finished sixth, they lose in that quarterfinal by one goal to Finland. It's so tight. One penalty can change the direction your whole tournament goes. One turnover, one giveaway. So we'll have to see. But it's one of the things that makes this tournament so exciting and I think has the attraction that it does that a lot of times you don't know, and would Canadian fans like to see Canada be a sure thing every year? Of course they would, but I think that the intrigue just gets added when we don't know that now anymore.
Terry, just wanted to ask you quickly, and we appreciate you coming on today. You know, you're in Toronto there, and they just had the World Cup of Hockey there. What's the fan reaction in Toronto right now? I realize the tournament is going to be in Montreal, but what's the vibe like there in Toronto for this tournament?
Well, it's hard to say right now. It's still, you know, although it's on the doorstep 9 days away, it's still enough time that, you know, the Leafs still have one home game left on Monday night here, guys, against Anaheim before they finish with two on the road before Christmas. So I think some of the tension might still be there. And we'll get an idea on Friday night when Canada plays the Swiss at the Air Canada Center in a preseason game. But I know that the Toronto fans really took to it 2 years ago. Of course, that was for the medal round.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm a little more curious about is to see is how the medal round carries over into Montreal now, because the round robin there, the games last 2 years ago, you know, not as many fans as they would have liked, for sure. But it could be one of those things, too, that gives us more interest. But as it gets closer, but it's just hard to gauge in the city itself, guys, right now. But I think the interest will be there. And you know, a lot of local kids playing on the team this year, you know, Strom being one of them for sure. So I don't think the rink will be close to empty, put it that way, on games Canada's playing. And I think it likely helps, too, that they're getting Russia right off the bat. But I would imagine the fan support there if the Canadian games will be full and solid for sure.
The fun starts 9 days from today. Terry Koshan of the Toronto Sun of Post Media, thanks for joining us and to talk about the World Juniors.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. Great conversation.
Our pleasure, Terry. We'll do it again soon. Let's head to break. When we come back, an update from Jets practice. They're on the ice at the Iceplex, and we'll talk about some guys named Crosby and Ovechkin. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Slammer, one-timer stop, rebound Crosby. He puts it in out of midair. Hallelujah, Hollywood. Sidney Crosby right out of midair on the rebound. And the Penguins make it 5-0.
55 seconds left in the power play. Here's Ovechkin, a shot, he scores! As Backstrom came into the left circle, and a wrister that beats Cam Ward. We're tied at one here in Carolina on Ovechkin's 14th of the season.
Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, no laughing matter. When it comes to the numbers they're able to put up.
Make me a milkshake, Mindell.
You're so weird.
That's from Mike Lang.
I know what it's from. I know what it's
from.
When
he says, make me a milkshake, Malkin.
Again, I understand what it's from. Most people that are listening may not be as familiar with Mike Lang's goal calls, so they're just wondering why you screamed at me to make you a milkshake.
Well, that's why I'm trying to enlighten the audience a little bit for those who maybe aren't aware of Mike Lang. I think we've had him on the show before.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think his goal calls
are classic.
Phenomenal. They're so creative and hilarious. You know, I think he's one of the best.
And speaking of hilarious, this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Dino Archie. Very few tickets available is what I understand. Get on it quickly, RumorsComedyClub.com. And of course, New Year's Eve, that's coming up. If you need tickets 2 weeks from now, if you're looking for plans, Rumors Comedy Club, that's the place to go for New Year's Eve. Check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com.
So I'm assuming with Dino Archie playing at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club tonight, we're going to see Veronica, Betty, you know, the whole crew?
Jughead.
You're Jughead is what you are. You can't decide if you're Big Moose or if you're Jughead, but you're one or the other.
Speaking of Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, this is a comedian that's played Rumors before. I'm seeing him tonight.
Oh, I'll be there too. I'll see you there.
Jerry, you're going?
I know. I prefer not to see you and or talk to you outside of the show.
Who are you going with?
I'm going with Laura and my parents. Mm. Yeah. We're all going to go see Seinfeld tonight. Yes, of course, he has actually been at Rumors. When you go to Rumors, big picture of Jerry up on the wall with his sign, his signature. So it'll be nice to see if he remembers his days back at Rumors, probably, 30 years ago at this point in time.
Yeah,
as I said told the story on air a number of times. When I went to The Daily Show a couple years ago to see Jon Stewart, and I was talking to Jon Stewart before the show, I was able to, he does a Q&A. I didn't even have to finish my question about performing at Rumors, and he remembered everything about it. He remembered staying, what hotel he stayed at. He remembered the mall. I guess 2 weeks in February in Winnipeg left an indelible mark on Jon Stewart.
He remembered having dinner with the Mindells.
True, that happened. Did. I have his autograph still.
You know who else is going to be a Jerry Seinfeld? Richie.
Oh, boy. These are all...
You know who will not be at Seinfeld?
David Nuke. Okay. Quick update. We'll talk about Ovechkin and Crosby, but a quick update from Winnipeg Jets skate, as I promised.
By the way, hopefully the rest of the show isn't about nothing.
Well, it already has been, so why not keep that going?
From the Jets skate at the Iceplex, Nick Petan, Sean Mathias, and Joel Armia all on the ice. None of them are wearing the no-contact jersey. So that tells you that they are very close to returning to the lineup. If all things go well at this practice, I mean, usually you want one full practice under their belt before they're able to return to the lineup.
Yep.
So if it's not tomorrow against the Avs, you're looking likely, at this point in time, likely in Vancouver on Tuesday or Thursday for Patan, Army, and Mathias. Very close for the Winnipeg Jets forward group to getting up to full speed.
Which means you better keep it locked to illegalcurve.com and on illegalcurve on Twitter, because we're going to have it all for you, any and all changes.
There you go. Dave Minuk's injury report, always available on illegalcurve.com. Crosby and Ovechkin.
Yep.
Crosby and Ovechkin, two of the best players of all time. Ezzy, you were crunching some numbers. Both those guys are going to hit 1,000 points this season in the NHL.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason why, you know, I texted you earlier in the week, Drew, and I wanted to bring this up on the show is because I don't think it's being covered that much. I don't think a lot of people realize that Ovechkin and Crosby are both going to hit 1,000 points, and Ovechkin might hit 1,000 points sometime late in 2016. Certainly it's going to be early in 2017. He's got 988 career points, and Sidney Crosby's not that far behind. He's at 972 right now. Pardon me, 971. So, I mean, both of these guys are going to hit 1,000 points. And what's so fascinating to me about this, guys, is that Crosby's 29 years old and Ovechkin's 30. I started thinking, well, how many points are these guys going to end up with at the end of their careers? And it's, you know, it's tough to predict because, you know, there's going to be injuries and you never know. I mean, you know, the production might, you know, slow down quite a bit later in their careers. But I just thought it would be interesting to look at how many points are these guys actually going to end up with. And, you know, we'll get into the numbers here in a second. But when I started crunching the numbers, and obviously this isn't an exact science here, but I think they're going to end up with very similar numbers. Obviously, Ovechkin's going to have more goals. But when you look at Crosby's point per game average, it's 1.3, mm-hmm. and Ovechkin's at just over a point a game, 1.1. And I factored that in there. I you know, decreased it a little bit. But, you know, as you mentioned, these are two of the greatest scorers of all time. And I just think, you know, it's amazing because these two guys, their careers are always going to be linked, right? Because sure. They both came into the NHL in 2005, 2006, after Ovechkin couldn't start his career because of the lockout, so he played in Russia that season. But, you know, these guys are always going to be linked, and, you know, their numbers are eerily similar when it comes to the points.
So how high up the list do you think that they get? Let's just start with Ovechkin. Like you said, he's currently at 988. You know, how far up the list does he get? Does he get to Mark Messier?
Well, the way
I mean, of course, Gretzky's.
Well,
not
it's going to be Jágr, right? But
I guess it'll be Jágr at that point in time.
Yeah,
does he get to that Jágr, Messier, Gordie Howe mark? Well, does he double his points really? Because that's what you're talking about.
Okay, well, you know, I crunched some numbers here, and you know, this is just for fun, right? And it's not exact. I thought I was being conservative as far as how many more seasons I think Ovechkin's going to play, and you know, I kept him at a point per game average, which again is a little bit below his 1.13 points per game average over the course of his career. I didn't want to lower it that much.
Sure.
So I had
If he falls off that much, he might retire before that point in time.
And you know, I was going over his numbers, guys, and it's mind boggling. The guy's already got 539 goals.
Yeah.
And I remember a couple of seasons ago we were debating, you know, whether or not Ovechkin was going to score 700 goals, and I said it was going to be, you know, not even a question. I thought he'd easily hit 700. I think we're talking about now if he's going to hit 800. So I'll give you what I think he's going to end up with. And I had Ovechkin playing 8 more years, and I had Crosby playing 8 more years again. I thought, you know, maybe they could play 10 more years.
That would be about 20 years for the course of their career.
Sure, and again, that would, you know, take, you know, Ovechkin to 38 years old and Crosby to 37 years old.
Sure.
And again, I could have easily made it 10 years, but I thought I'll be a little bit conservative and, you know, give them 8 more years in the NHL, right?
Mm-hmm.
So based on, you know, his career points per game, and, you know, how many goals he scored and all of that, I had him playing 8 more years, and at a point per game, he ends his career with 1,682 points. And what's mind-boggling is because he scores 55% of his points are goals,
yeah,
he ends up with 917 career goals, breaking Gretzky's record.
Well, I'll tell you what. Hold it there. We'll cycle back to this in the last segment of the show. Stephen Wino from the Associated Press joins us next. We'll talk to Stephen about the Metropolitan Division. We'll talk about the league as a whole. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you here in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here. And for the latest Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets news, there's only one place to go. That's illegalcurve.com.
Now,
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Associated Press. His name is Stephen Wino. Stephen, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Stephen?
Doing all right.
That's good. Brought you on to talk about the NHL, talk a little bit about the Metropolitan Division. Are the Blue Jackets, Penguins, Capitals, Rangers, and Flyers ever going to lose in regulation again?
No, I don't. Well, until they play each other, no. I mean, this is the problem for the Devils, the Hurricanes, and the Islanders right now. It's all these teams are not playing each other and winning all these games to where they just got to hope when the Rangers and the Flyers and the Caps, the Blue Jackets, the Penguins face each other that they're not 3-point games. A game like the Kings last night beating the Penguins in overtime. The Penguins are still picking up points, and the Blue Jackets on not only an 8-game winning streak but a 10-game point streak. Mm-hmm. You know this is going to end at some point, but the gap that these top five teams in the division are putting between themselves and not only the bottom of the Metro, but the rest of the Eastern Conference for a playoff spot, it's getting to the point where it's not quite insurmountable, but it's getting to the point where it's a really tough uphill climb for these teams to even make it back into the playoff picture.
Stephen, you used to cover the Philadelphia Flyers, and you know, in addition to the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Philadelphia Flyers really are the biggest story of the NHL right now. They have an opportunity today to win their 11th game in a row. Obviously, they're not going to sustain this winning streak. They're not going to, you know, win the next whatever it is, 48 games in a row here. But when you look at the Philadelphia Flyers and you know their playoff hopes, is this a team that could actually go far in the playoffs? In your opinion,
if they play like this, there's no reason that they can't. And we saw with Michael Neuwirth in the playoffs last year against the Capitals how he could take over a game. Steve Mason's been playing exceptional with Michael Neuwirth out. Mason's won now 8 in a row. Anthony Stoller's coming in for kind of limited duty to win 2 of them. But the power play and the penalty kill have been excellent. I mean, when even with injuries, Mark Streit out for a couple of weeks, Sean Couturier out, Matt Reed out, the Flyers special teams has been terrific. Jake Voracek finally playing and producing like the $8 million man he is on this 8-year, $64 million deal. It's a tough Eastern Conference. I mean, you look at the teams there beyond the Metropolitan Division, even Carey Price and the Canadiens. It's tough to predict who's going to come out of that. But the Flyers are certainly a threat. I mean, they've got the top-end talent in Voracek and Claude Giroux, Shane Gostisbehere, and even Ivan Provorov. Who you guys in the Winnipeg area know very well from his time in Brandon. This is a guy who is a number one defenseman already 19 years old.
Stephen, the Department of Player Safety has been busy the last couple of days. Cody Eakin got a 4-game suspension, and Mike Hoffman received 2 games. What did you think of those suspensions?
I think they're fair. I mean, I'm surprised Cody Eakin didn't even get more than 4 games for running over Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, it's hard for me to understand exactly what Cody Eakin's thought process was on a play like that, unless he thought it was a skater and not Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, the way he kind of bowled over Lundqvist behind the net, it was like you would do for a defenseman who's going after the puck, and a defenseman expects contact in that situation. Henrik Lundqvist, there's no way he could have expected contact. The fact that Cody Eakin got a phone hearing and not an in-person hearing obviously limited the suspension to 5 games. And 4 seems about fair, if not a little lenient, that situation. But Cody Eakin's not a predator. He's not a first-time offender by the NHL's program. So I certainly understand that. And Mike Hoffman, 2 games, that's also about right for the hit on Logan Couture the other night. Couture seemed to be fine, even though he left that game with what seemed to be at the time a concussion, a play that you understand why. It's a 2-game suspension, and then the kind of hit you want to take that the NHL is trying to get out of the game. I mean, that's what you don't want in the game. But again, same thing with Cody Eakin. Mike Hoffman, it's not like he's a repeat offender. It's not like he's a dangerous player out there, but certainly a dangerous hit.
Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the NHL. Stephen, the Columbus Blue Jackets, fewest losses in regulation in the NHL with 5. Fewest goals against in the NHL with 58. Tied for the best goals for goals against differential with plus 36. They're 9-0-1 in the last 10. They've won 8 in a row. There's no sign of them slowing down this torrid pace they're on. It's obviously, I mean, from my perspective, it's the best story in the NHL so far this season. Is it also one of the most unexpected stories in the last few years, the way the Blue Jackets, what the Blue Jackets are doing with John Tortorella as their head coach?
John Tortorella is the coach of the most surprising team in the NHL. Yes, repeat that and say that over again.
Yeah.
Because when the U.S. bombed at the World Cup, everyone and the Blue Jackets got off to a slow start, everyone wondered if John Tortorella would be the first coach fired. Mm-hmm. Instead, this has been an incredible return to prominence for the Blue Jackets, who really weren't sure if they were for real after that playoff appearance a couple of years ago, had the bad injuries, firing Todd Richards, replacing him with John Tortorella. Didn't know if John Tortorella still had his fastball. We didn't know if he could still coach in the new NHL. His cup win with Tampa Bay came in 2004, before the salary cap, before the new rules. And now he's got a team where they take the morning skates have essentially become irrelevant. He's practiced way less than teams do. He's gotten great goaltending from Sergei Bobrovsky, which I don't know how much credit John Tortorella can take. But this is a team that's bought into John Tortorella's what they call a very fair style of coaching, that kind of players could treat equally. It's an old-school mentality, but something he's adapted back to his Tampa Bay days, that the safest desk kind of mentality, and gotten production from Cam Atkinson. You've got older players on that team like Brandon Dubinsky, who are used to John Tortorella and have kind of seen his development as a coach. And Seth Jones, when he's been healthy, he's played major minutes for that team. And this is and Zach Werenski, there's talent there. John Tortorella being able to take advantage of that talent is one of the more surprising and I guess uplifting, if you're a Columbus fan or you're a hockey person, to see John Tortorella develop like this.
Steven, last night at the Centre Bell, Carey Price was pulled after allowing 4 goals. What was going through your head when you saw Carey Price leave the ice there and give a bit of a stare down?
Probably was going through Patrick Waugh and Mario Tremblay's mind a couple decades ago. It was not this is the last game I'll ever play for the Montreal Canadiens style, but it was a stare of death from Carey Price over to Michel Therrien. And part of me wonders if it was more of a mercy decision. Obviously, with Carey Price is now going to start tonight in Washington against Braden Holtby, that you want to kind of take him out of that game because the Canadiens weren't good against the Sharks. 3 goals on the first 8 shots. Montreal didn't really show up at the start of that game, and the Canadiens were in a hole early in that one. And it wasn't Carey Price's fault. He didn't have his best. His teammates didn't have his best. I would have understood if after 8 shots, Michel Therrien just says, look, Carey, this is not our night. This is not your fault, but get out of this game and let's regroup and play the Capitals in a big game tomorrow. The Capitals have now won 6 in a row. But certainly, it's not the first time that the Michel Therrien, whether it's Max Pacioretty or P.K. Subban before that, or Carey Price, if there's a little bit of friction. But how can you argue with the Canadiens' success this season, even if Michel Therrien's kind of methods have been questioned before and questioned last season?
Steven, the Yahoo survey of for U.S. fans and about who they must see, and you know, we look at guys like Austin Matthews at 15%, Connor McDavid is at about 9%, Patrick Laine was at 4%. These are the young, upcoming superstars. Now, of course, they're all playing in Canadian markets. Is that a problem for the NHL that so many of the really exciting young players are in Canadian markets?
It's a problem if U.S. TV is not willing to buy into it. And then when the schedule came out over the summer and we saw that the Edmonton Oilers were never on U.S. TV, they changed that last week with the McDavid-Matthews matchup being joined in progress, at least from Edmonton. That's really the next step for NBC and the NHL is, even if you have to recognize that most markets in the U.S., fans want to watch their own team, that you have to start showcasing Laine, McDavid, Matthews, Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, these kind of players on U.S. TV if you're going to want people to start understanding who they are. It was a break, obviously, for the NHL to have Sidney Crosby go to a market like Pittsburgh that was in trouble at the time, certainly, and has turned into one of the best hockey markets in the U.S., if not the best hockey market in the U.S. Buffalo is a great one with Jack Eichel, and the Sabres are prominent on national TV, even as they are at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. It's up to U.S. television to take the belief and hope that U.S. fans who are casual fans and fans of other teams want to tune in and watch the Edmonton Oilers, want to tune in and watch the Toronto Maple Leafs when they're not playing their own team. That's the next challenge, because in Canada we know that everybody wants to watch those teams and those games and watch the big stars. And the NBA has been way quicker to that than the NHL of marketing stars over just teams. The NHL has been very much, and Bill Daly even recently saying that teams are what drives the NHL. But when you have big-time stars, when you have the McDavids, the Matthews, Goudreaus, Carey Price even, and Patrick Laine and all the young stars of the Jets, you want fans in the U.S. specifically to say, hey, I want to turn on and watch this player and not just watch this uniform.
I couldn't agree with you more on that point there, Stephen. We'll let you go on this last question. We sort of spent our time in the Eastern Conference for the majority of this interview. You know, we talked about Carey Price and the stare down he gave last night. The San Jose Sharks, they were the team that chased Carey Price out of the Nets last night. 19-11-1 on the season. They were sort of a surprise team to make it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals last season. Maybe some people expected a little bit of a step back or maybe a return to form for the Sharks. Haven't seen that so far. They just continue to churn away. They're leading the Pacific Division. You know, are you surprised at the San Jose Sharks that they haven't skipped a beat since last year's Stanley Cup Finals?
No, I was more surprised at their slow start, and they lost three in a row at home before going on an Eastern Conference swing that kind of got their season back together a little bit. And Pete DeBoer wants the Sharks playing kind of low scoring, allow Martin Jones to face shots from the outside, allow Martin Jones to kind of play in 2-1, 3-2 games and not have these 6-5 style shootouts, which is what the Sharks were doing earlier in the season. Martin Jones has found his game. We haven't seen the aging, really, of Joe Thornton, who can still certainly play. Patrick Marleau has been very serviceable for the Sharks. And even Kevin LeBanc, this is a kid who got called up, a Staten Island boy, got called up, and now Pete DeBoer says he's been too good to take him out of the lineup. This is the Sharks team that can keep calling up players, whether it's a Mirko Mueller, whether it's a Timo Meier, who scored his first NHL goal on his first shot last night against Carey Price. There's certainly a resource of young talent there for San Jose, and Pete DeBoer, from his trip to the final with the New Jersey Devils a few years ago, showed how he can sustain some success with a team. He might wear players down after a little while, but he's a winning coach. I mean, this is a guy who knows what to do with talent. Joe Pavelski certainly is no slouch, one of the best goal scorers over the past several seasons. It would surprise me if the Sharks aren't one of the top in the Western Conference come playoff time.
Stephen Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, how excited is Josh Norman to be facing his old Carolina Panthers teammates on Monday?
Oh, he's fired up. He can't wait to pick off Cam Newton, to sack Cam Newton. I know he's buddies with Cam, but not buddies with the Panthers general manager coaching staff anymore after what happened in April.
Well, that'll be the Monday nighter, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. Looking forward to that. Hoping as Vikings fans here in Winnipeg that the Panthers are able to pull the upset. That would certainly help the Vikings playoff chances. But we'll leave that for a different show that's more football related. Stephen, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Stephen. That's Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. We'll come back. We'll touch on, continue on with that Ovechkin-Crosby conversation we were having in the previous segment. One segment to go. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour. One final segment of IC Radio for this Saturday morning.
Let's just keep playing Soundgarden here. Okay.
Quick programming note. Next Saturday, we're going to take the Saturday off. It's Christmas Eve. We're going to spend it with our loved ones. So no show next Saturday.
I actually won't be in the country.
You said that like 18 times already.
I've said it once.
Like once 18, who's counting?
Well, you know what, Drew? When I'm sitting on the beach in Mexico.
Enjoying a Mai Tai?
Drinking a Corona.
Oh, Corona, sorry.
And, you know, I'm just running my feet, which had a pedicure the previous week. You know, I'll be thinking of you.
You know, if we had the resources or if we were a little more Stern-like, by which I mean Howard Stern, we would actually we'd have like a producer go with you to the esthetician this afternoon.
Well, Chris, what are you up to?
Yeah,
you have just
Chris,
some time?
You got time? You want to go with Ezzy to, you know, hear what the esthetician has to say about his pedicure?
As much as I'd like to go and watch him get his feet rubbed by somebody, I think I'm going to pass. Thank you very much.
Chris, we can even we can give you these goggles so when they take the inevitable the saw to his toes, you won't get hit by any splash.
They actually have a belt sander is what they're going to be using, not just like a little handheld tool. Yeah. It's got some electricity behind it.
We already subject Chris to 3 hours of this show. We're not going to make him do double duty.
Well, I mean... somebody deserves hazard pay for having to deal with you and your feet later on this afternoon.
I believe her name is Nao.
No. Nao deserves hazard pay for wanting to spend quality time with him on a regular basis. But, I mean, she's a very, you know, Naomi's terrific. The one big mistake she's made in her life is trying to spend time with you. I can't figure that out for the life of me. But I suppose you could say the same thing about Laura and everybody else.
Let's get to the Crosby Ovechkin segment here, Drew.
Okay, the Crosby. Continuing on, we were talking about their point totals as they, you know, enter into the back half of their NHL career. And where we think they're going to finish up as they wind down over the next decade or so.
Right, and we don't have that much time here, so I'm going to try to make this as quick as I can.
6 minutes, I think.
6 minutes here, Drew. So going back to a couple segments ago before we had Steven Wino on, I predicted, based on Alexander Ovechkin's career points per game, I lowered it a little bit, but it was a point per game and the amount of games he averages, and I didn't mention this last segment, Ovechkin surprisingly averages 79 games a season. He doesn't miss a lot of games. By the way, I should mention that the lockout season was not included in this because it was a shortened season. So using that, I had Ovechkin at 1,682 career points. So that's what I think he's going to get to. And out of those 1,682 points, I think he's going to reach 917 goals, which... sounds incredible because Gretzky's record would be broken, but 55% of Ovechkin's points are goals. So if you look at his career average, 1,682 points, 55% of those points would be 917 goals, Drew. And I even looked at, even if you average Ovechkin at 40 goals a season for eight seasons after this year, he still hits 800-plus goals. So I think Ovechkin's going to be somewhere between 800 and 900 career goals by the time his career would be over, which would put him, obviously, top two of all time. So let's get to Crosby here, though.
Okay.
So Crosby averages 67 games a year.
Yeah.
And that's, again, not including the lockout shortened year, because you remember, 6 or 7 years ago, he missed a lot of hockey there.
Mm-hmm.
So I also have Crosby playing 8 more years, just to be a little bit more conservative. So if you look at how many career points he's already got, he's got 971. And Chris Curry also put this stat together. It looks like Crosby's going to hit 1,000 in 751 career games, which means 20 games from now, which would make him the 12th fastest of all time to hit 1,000 career points. Ovechkin will hit 1,000 career points in 877 career games, which is 9 games from now.
Sure.
So both are going to hit it sometime in January. So getting back to Crosby, averaging 67 games a season, playing 8 more years, which would be 643 more points, and factoring in the fact that he's on pace for 108 career points, I have Sidney Crosby finishing his career with 1,722 points. He still ends up with 637 goals based on the fact that 35% of his points
come
from goals as opposed to Ovechkin.
The amazing thing is you had 1,722, which is one behind Mario Lemieux at 1,723.
Two guys who, of course, you think about both of them. What if they had been healthy throughout the entirety of their careers?
Right.
Crosby, of course, with the concussions. Lemieux with the
cancer
and the back problems and everything else. What if both of them had been healthy? Where would they have ended up on this list? I mean, I think it's fairly clear they both would have been ahead of Mark Messier. They would have at least been, or Jagr, as the case may be.
Well, but you also have to, if you're going to do that, then bring back Jagr's KHL seasons plus lockout seasons.
Fine. Also a very valid point there.
Well, then you can throw in, as far as goals go, throw in Bobby Hull's WHA goals, and he's higher up on the list, right? But regardless, I think what's the most fascinating, guys, is that these guys, Crosby and Ovechkin, come into the league at the same time, and 17 points separate them right now, career points. And Crosby would have more points than Ovechkin if he was healthy. But I think what's amazing is that Ovechkin doesn't miss a lot of hockey, but Crosby averages more points a game than Crosby, 0.2 more points a game with Ovechkin scoring more goals. So it's going to be really interesting to see, over the years, how many points they end up with. They're both going to hit, as we said, 1,000 points in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And
can you foresee Gretzky's point record is not going to be touched?
Ever.
No.
Can you foresee Alex Ovechkin
yes.
getting to Gretzky's goal mark?
Well, that's what I was saying a couple of segments ago. I mean, if you average out his points per game for 8 years
yeah.
and then you use a percentage of his points as goals, he hits 917 goals. But certainly, I think, without a shadow of a doubt...
356 goals to beat Gretzky is what he needs.
Well, he's already got 539. He's most yeah. likely going to have 565, 570 by the time this season is over, based on the fact that he almost gets 50 yeah. goals every year. So, I mean, I think he easily hits 800. I think a couple of years ago, people weren't sure if he was going to hit 700.
Oh, we had this fight on the show yeah. with Rich a couple of years
ago.
When
I said he'd easily hit 700, I think right now it's a question, will he get to 800 or 900?
Yeah, it's going to be... That's the one to watch. If he can continue at his pace, and that's the big one, it'll be very interesting to see how Alex Ovechkin does. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Stephen Wino, Terry Koshan, Drew Spivak, and Jeff Hamilton. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, the Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant, and Comedy Club. Support them because they support us. Big props to producer Chris, doing a great job behind the board, getting us on and off the air like the expert that he is. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.